As I was reading through this chapter in Hosea this week and pondering and wrestling, there's a whole bunch of different things that jumped into my mind, and there's some songs that jumped in, and there's different things that go on. But one of the things that really sort of just let out is this question that I have, and I want to bring it out to you a little bit and just kind of work with you a little bit. And I'm wondering, what is it about the instruction to come here, or even, you know, anything that resembles that kind of instruction, that makes children want to do the opposite? Like, what is it about that kind of idea, that phrase, that when it comes out of an adult's mouth and floats through the air, it gets transformed somehow before it enters a child's ear to run farther away? Am I missing something? Is there a secret here that we go? Maybe those of you who are parents, you've experienced this, or maybe, you know, those of you who remember being a child, you remember doing that. Or if that's a little hard for your memory, Slava, maybe we can just turn the gain down on my mic a little bit. I get a little squeal up here. Maybe you've watched it happen around you, where you've innocently been outside somewhere or in the grocery market, and you see a child moving away from their parent, and the parent says, "No, stop, come over here," and you see the child turn ever so slightly, smile ever so largely, and move ever so faster. Does that sound... Does anyone not have any of those experiences going through? I figured that was the case, but I don't know why. I don't know what it is that translates "you need to come here" into "oh, you want me to run further away. I'm going to do my thing." Cindy and I are constantly saying this to our kids. We're constantly saying, "Wait, don't go, come here. No, that's, don't go that way. Come, don't make me chase you down." Don't, we're constantly doing that sort of things. And usually the "come here" is repeated multiple times, and often in the context of some sort of negotiated conversation. "Come here. Why?" "Well, because I said so. But I don't want to. I don't care. I want you to come here." And it, you know, it spirals downward after that to "come here, come here, 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 here." And I begin to sound like an unintelligible person that comes here. But maybe it has to do with independence. Maybe it has to do with kids stretching their wings. Maybe it just is this sinful nature, this indwelling part of us that says, "I know what's best for me, and no one else does," even though others, adults, usually in the case of children, do have a better idea of, if you keep running, you're going to run into the street, and the car will hit you, and I guess we can make another one just like you, but why risk it, right? So this comes, you know, this idea that comes out. But I pick on parents a little bit. I point them out because they deal with it a lot. But it's not only in the parenting role that you have this conversation, that you have this idea. Now those of you who are teachers in our midst here, you may resonate with my story here a little bit. I had a teacher at one point who frequently had to. I'm choosing to say had to. I'd like to think that he didn't just choose this out of his own will, but had to do this because we were disobedient people. He would often use the phrase, "Will you please come here?" "No, I want you to come here. That is over there. This is over here. Come here." And that's how he would explain the whole time. There was no dialogue. He just, "Come here. That is over there. This is over here. Come here." And we would wait for the whole thing to go through before we moved. "I don't know. Come here." "Oh, no, wait. There's more to be said. We haven't gone through 'that is over there. This is over here.' We are now there. We need to be here. Now it's clear where it's like we're a little bit slow as students. And he would go there. It's a silly thing. It's a silly thing that the more we are told to stay close to home, the more we are told to stay where it is safe, where it is familiar, the more we resist that and we try to run from it. Let's move to Hosea. Let's move to what I was just reading about in chapter 11 here. But before we get there, a little bit of background. Now, Hosea, if you don't know who he is, there's a lot that goes on, but he's most famously known as the prophet who God told to marry a prostitute as an illustration for how Israel treated God in their relationship. Hosea marries Gomer. Gomer is a prostitute, and for all sorts of time, she's off doing her thing, and Hosea is just standing there, now what do I do, God? And then they have some children, and the children are named things that are not encouraging names at all. Again, all part of God trying to illustrate to the Israelites, get his point across that you people who I have called out, who I've brought, who I have taught, who I have built into, who I have said, I will be your God, I will make you into a great nation. You keep running off to go and see what's happening on the other side of the fence. You think that life is better out there, and so you ignore the, that is over there, this is over here, come here stuff. The safety of where it's going. And that's Hosea and his messages is moving through there. And a lot of what we find in the early parts of Hosea is the idea, the illustration of a marriage concept. The bride and the groom, God is the groom in the space, and the Israelites are the bride, and they go off and keep cheating on him, and it's not very pleasant to talk about, not very pleasant to read. But when we get into chapter 11, the illustration shifts a little bit. We're still in a family illustration. We're still in a family context, but it shifts now to a parent-child thing. And we come into chapter 11, and we have this tension that we hear in God's voice, and we hear in the message that comes out, because we see God is explaining, that I have done these things for you. I have fed you. I've lifted you up. I taught you to walk. I changed your diapers. I fed you stuff. I taught you how to read. I did all of these things as a parent. And the more I loved on you, the more I built into you, the more I invested myself in you, the more I gave to you, the more you said, yeah, no, I'm going to go see what's on over here. Now over here has never done anything for me. And in fact, it's probably hurt me. It's cost me stuff. And I haven't gained it all, but this was good, really good. But wow, I'm going to check out over here because I think I know what's better. It's almost as though they say I can come back to this anytime. I'm going to go over here, but God says, you kind of spit in my face. You're going against that. Why is it you're doing that? So he's explaining. Says I've loved you as a parent loves a child in the early part of these chapters, and then he kind of shifts a little bit, and he marks out and he wrestles with, and he points out that bad things are happening to the Israelites, not because God has abandoned them, but because they have chosen to abandon God. Now, it would be easy for God to say to those Israelites, and to really to all of us, it would be easy for him to say, you know what, I did my best, you didn't want to listen, so I'm not going to bother any longer and just kind of let you go on your own. Now, as parents, we can only try to tell our kids not to do something so many times. And if they keep refusing to listen, and I'll flip this back a little bit here, because I recognize not all of us are parents, but all of us have had parents, and so all of us have been kids in this. At some point, all of us have listened to our parents say, don't do this, ad nauseum, and then go ahead and do it anyways, and discover the harm that happens. For example, don't touch the stove because it's hot. Don't touch the stove because it's hot. Why? It'll burn you. It'll hurt. Don't touch the stove because it's hot. Don't touch it. Psst. Oh, that really hurt. This, you know, at some point, consequences have to teach the lesson that is not being heard, that's not being listened to. And God is saying there's going to be consequences. And so in this chapter 11, if you've got your Bibles open and you're following along with me, first four verses talks about, I've done all these things for the Israelites, but because they have not listened, because they keep running away, because they have gone over there, not over here, sort of thing, he says, they will return back to slavery. That's the imagery of Egypt in that phrase. Return back to being slaves. They will be embroiled with war. They will not know peace any longer. They will be defeated. They will be carried off. They will be nothing, because they have chosen to not honor me, because they've chosen to do their own thing. They have, as verse 7 puts it here, they have determined to desert me. And so we see this tension. And God is wrestling now with the consequences of the Israelites' actions, because he knows what's going on. The consequences is basically they're going to hell. And God still wants to provide a way out for them. And the dialogue in the chapter goes back and forth between care and letting go and then protecting them again. And as we move in the last part, in verses 8 down through 11, we see that God moves back to saying, but I will not just let them go. I can't just say, fine, you're 18, you're out of the house, you're doing your own thing. I tried my best. I can't do any more for you. Good luck. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. And God says, I just can't do that. I can't allow my people, my children, to be abandoned completely in that way. And so he opens up the door. He begins to explain about protecting. He says, I will allow a way back. Someday they will return to me. I will roar like a mighty lion, and they will go, wait a minute, that guy, God, I remember him. That's where I should be. God will say, that is over there, this is over here, come here. And it's that message at the end, that message that says, you have deserted me, you have abandoned me, but the door is still open, but you can still come back, but it's not finished, it's not the end of the road, you still have an option. That's the message we need to hear. That's what we need to get coming out of this chapter. We need to hear that, because we are the ones who run away from God. Now, some of us do this very literally. Some of us are more subtle about it. The literal ones literally walk out of church. They say, this isn't for me. This message isn't for me. This idea isn't for me. I can't handle this. I don't want to be restricted by God. I see people around me, and guess what? People around me aren't perfect, and they've said something that hurt me, or they've done something that I didn't agree with, and so I'm enough of this. I'm done with God. I'm done with the whole thing. Walk out, literally abandoned. But some of us are more subtle. Some of us still hang on to lip service to God. Some of us still go through the motions, but we don't let it translate into our relationship with Him. We let it translate into our daily lives. It's kind of like we keep God in our back pocket for a time when we really need Him, but we really aren't going to make an effort to align our lives to be active followers. We're kind of just Keep one foot on one side and the other foot on the other side and straddle the fence and say, I got this covered. I can do this. I have the best of both worlds. I can do what I want and still make God happy under my terms. But all of those are walking away from God. All of those are hearing God say, come here. I want to love you. I want what's best for you. I have life for you. And we hear, yeah, good. I'm just keep going this way, but you know. God sees all of that in his people. And even though he would be within his rights to just wash his hands of the lot of us, just say, I'm done. I can't, I'm done. He still leaves the door open. He still leaves the door open for when we do hear his voice still calling out, come. Come to me. Come on back. I'm still here, waiting for you, ready for you. And we can come back to him. And this invitation that he's given to the Israelites to say they will come back, they'll hear my voice, that's for us. And it may seem to you that God has abandoned you. It may seem that you have burned every bridge possible between yourself and God. Maybe today you've come in here and you said, this is the last ditch effort. I don't even know why I got in. I expected when I walked to the doors of the church, and I've talked to people who have this exact experience, I expect when I get to the door of the church that something will stop me physically from actually being able to walk through the door because I have been so bad to God. I have abandoned him. I've turned my back on him so much. That I expect to not actually, other people walk past me, but I expect that there's a barrier, there's a do not pass, I don't have the ticket. God says there is no ticket, everyone is welcome in. Even if from your perspective, there's no possible way, he says there is a way. He is waiting for you, he is calling to you. And no matter how far away from God you may feel that you are, God's voice gets there. His invitation reaches there. And no matter how long you have been away from him or how long you think it might come back, it is an instant. An instant for God. That door is right behind you. Not miles behind you, just right behind you. Turn around and walk through it, is what God is saying. Maybe you've, as I said, been spending the last few years of your life just going through the motions of church, going through the motions of Christianity, doing what you think looks right, but in your heart and your passions, they're no longer invested in truly following and living for God. And you know what? God is waiting for you too. He's standing at that same door saying, you're not that far. You're not out of my reach. Come back to me. But wherever you're coming back from, however far away you think you are, there needs to be a change in your life. God doesn't say, come back to me and just keep doing the same thing. God says, you need to change your life. God isn't going to just snap his fingers and make you a different person. You have to want to change. And you have to want to turn away from living in such a way that dishonors God. And now I draw your attention to what the Apostle Paul was saying in Colossians chapter 3 that Melody read for us earlier. Paul lists in those 11 verses that she read various behaviors that have no place in the life of a person who is truly following God. They are part of an old life. They are part of the me first life, not part of what God has for us. They are the part of the life that ignored God's caution and said, I can be the God of me. The parts that we're not proud of, the parts that aren't shiny, the parts that have hurt us, the parts that are the consequences of running from God instead of running towards him. And if we really want to change our lives, and if we really want to allow God to be in charge of our lives, to really accept him, to accept his love, to accept his welcome back, to heed his call back to him, then we need to make room for him to dwell within us. And Paul says, put all that stuff out. Cast it out. We had a sewer backup in our basement on Thursday night. So I brought Evelyn home from the hospital, got her all tucked into bed, resting up night, sewer's backing up. Yay, Mus. And it's gross. And it stinks. And it's full of garbage. And it's no good. And we can't use it. And we can't put things in there that will be helpful for us. And things need to get tossed out. That's the stuff that God says. That stuff needs to get out of your life. The sewage needs to get out of your life to make room for me to be in there. And when there's room for me to be in there, then your character changes. Then we begin to reflect God and act like him, look like him, and people see him in us, around us. And if we read further in Colossians, we jump to chapter to verse 12. to 15 in that. I'm going to read that for us here. You will see what it looks like. It looks like this. It says, since God chose you to be the holy people he loves, you must clothe yourselves with tender-hearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds us all together in perfect harmony. And let the peace that comes from Christ rule in your hearts, for as members of one body, you are called to live in peace and always be thankful. That's the opposite. That's what fills in the space when we have nothing to do with sexual immorality, impurity, lust, and evil desires, greed, idolatry. All of these things that Paul says, but don't have anything to do with that. You've come back to God, leave all that stuff that you thought was shiny behind, and come to what really shines, the love of God. So how will you respond to God calling you back? Will you continue to ignore him and risk the consequences? Or will you listen to his voice and turn back to him, casting off all the stuff that holds you down, and allow your life to be led by love, God's love? It is your choice. God is holding the door open for you. He's calling, come here. And he will continue to do that and continue to wait on you. The invitation is there. Don't miss it. Don't let it pass you by. Let's pray together.